van die machtige waters van die Oranje in die Noordkaap tot die uitgestrektheid van die Grand Canyon in Arizona. Radio Grootrivier.co.za, oral op die web. Radiostasie van die Suidlanders.
Goeienaand en welkom by Radio Grootrivier, radiostasie van die Suidlanders, jou stem hier uit die Noordkaap uit en natuurlik ook jou kulturele Afrikaanse lekker radiostasie. En vanaand is ons weer eens besig met een van ons programme op 'n donderdag aand, die Suidlanders geselsprogram. Ons het in hierdie program met hierdie reeks het ons nou al gesels met die hoofde en die leiers van Suidlanders om 'n bietjie meer perspektief te kry oor wat by die Suidlanders organisasie agter die skerms aangaan. En vir die laaste 5 donderdae of 6 donderdae het ons nou al met Simon Roche gepraat. Hy is die nasionale departementshoof van buitelands en hy het natuurlik 'n groot magdom kennis oor wat in die wêreld aan die gang is. Nou al 'n paar jaar terug, hoekom het Rusland en Oekraïne mekaar aangevat en wat op die oomblik in Israel aan die gang is. En hierdie week het daar natuurlik baie dinge in die nuus gebeur. So allerhande lekker dinge wat ons met Simon kan gesels. So kom ons kyk gou of ons vir Simon op die lyn kan kry. Hey, hallo Simon.
How's it, Marius? How are you?
Dit gaan goed met my en met jou.
Ja, dit gaan goed met my ook, dankie, Marius.
Daar's hy, laat ek net hier kyk of al die levels en die dinge reg is, dat jy mooi helder deurkom. Daar's hy, Simon. So ja, ek het weer eens vir die luisteraars gesê, ons is besig met hierdie lekker Suidlanders geselsprogram en ja, hierdie week het daar definitief baie baie dinge gebeur waaroor ons kan gesels.
Yeah, I've made a little list here, and I'll run through it quickly, and then you can choose your favorite topic to begin with.
Okay.
We've got the Iran-Israel drama. We've got the red heifer, new news about the red heifer that has to be slaughtered for the erection of the third temple in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
We've got Vladimir Putin was apparently, there was a plot to assassinate him on Russia's Navy Day, which was the 28th of July. And we've got Ukraine's incursion into Russia of yesterday. You and I had a nice chat earlier, and I mentioned the white tenters, the Americans preparing to be the first people in the white tent. So as the one guy said to me, I want to be first so that I don't have to go into a white tent. I want to come and stay with you. We had Monday's, it's a bit more complicated than this, but in simple terms, the $4.5 trillion that was erased from the United States stock exchange markets, equities markets, from the high in July to Monday. And then I thought I would just throw in a nice, cute story about the rap song "Many Men" and Donald Trump. There's a nice, cute story there. So yeah, tell me where you'd like to start.
Simon, ek dink ons begin hierso by die markte wat triljoene dollars verloor het. En miskien kan ons dan aangaan met Amerika, met die vliegtuie en die bote wat hulle na Israel toe gestuur het en hoekom Israel so opdrukkerig is om so vinnig as moontlik daai gebiede te vat wat dan natuurlik gaan lei na die rooi heffers toe. En dan kan ons kyk of ons nog tyd daarna het. Maar ja, kom ons kop af met die markte wat daai biljoene of triljoene dollars verloor het.
Yeah, so on Monday, 7 stocks, everybody lost money. But the 7 what is stocks that they refer to as the Magnificent 7. So it's Google, Microsoft, Nvidia, Apple, I think Tesla could be one of them. Anyway, those Magnificent 7 lost $1.5 trillion. The markets lost more. And on Friday, a whole lot had been lost as well. And if you add it all up, going back to the high point of the month of July, then the total amount lost is $4.5 trillion. A little bit was clawed back on Tuesday, But that was to be expected. There was nobody who believed that there wouldn't be a clawback, because it's natural for people to take advantage of dips in the market. Buy the dip is a saying. But the important thing is that the market crisis that many top observers have been predicting for some time, as in years, that is, as the Americans say, kick the can down the road. In other words, instead of bending down to pick up a can and put it in the dustbin, you just kick it and kick it and kick it and kick it and kick it. And but sooner or later, you're going to have to pick up your litter. So it doesn't help. This thing, that this can that has been kicked down the road, is a kind of a fulfillment of something that's been coming a long, long, long way. And we can go back 10 years, we can go back 15, we can go back to the dot-com bubble, we can go back to 1987. It is an expression of a systemic fallacy within the markets. I won't get into all of the technical details. Let it suffice to say that the top voices, including many of those who have hitherto said, no, the right wingers are just being conspiratorial, or such and such observers are getting carried away, they're being neurotic, it's not that bad. The top observers are now saying that following this crash, there has to be very soon a much, much, much worse one, because there are certain problems in the market that are not going to get worked out. For example, there's about a $70 trillion unrealized debt in the American banking system. There are certain obligations within the American fiscal system that are not being counted when people talk about the budget and the deficit and the this and the that. And they're playing a big role in causing the government to borrow huge amounts of money, which places pressure on the dollar. And in return, the dollar exports its devaluation to other countries through bonds. And so you had in Japan last week what they call problems in the carry trades. We don't have to get into the details, but the long and the short of it is that there is so much that's wrong with the American economy and the American financial system and the dollar as the dollar and the American fiscus, that now that this first big event has happened, people are saying all hell is going to break loose next. And of course, that's going to affect us very badly, because ultimately all debt goes back to the dollar. It's, again, a very complicated thing, and we try to keep this chat to half an hour or less. So I won't go into that, but you never know. Maybe someday we will sit and talk just about that in very simple, words that people who are not exposed to this every day will understand. So that's the story. Massive crisis in America, and they're saying that it's just the beginning.
Ja, soos wat jy vroeger vir my gesê het, terwyl ons oor die telefoon gesels het, is, daar is een ou wat gesê het, dit gaan nie 'n recession wees nie, dit gaan nie 'n depression wees nie, iets kom wat hulle nog nooit voorheen beleef het in Amerika se geskiedenis, as dit kom by die dollar nie.
Ja, one of America's most highly respected conservative Christian radio broadcasters of many decades, a guy by the name of Glenn Beck, said that. He said exactly that.
Yeah.
People are panicking. Oof.
Ja, nie, ek sal jou glo. George Soros het ook sy geld mos nou uit Apple uitgehaal, en ek weet nie watter ander van die ryk ouens het liewerster hulle geld maar in die bank gehou as in die markte nie.
Ja, Warren Buffett. It wasn't George Soros, it was Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, ja.
He took the day before he sold $75 billion of Apple stock. $75 billion. He's now sitting on on $277 billion of cash. Now, cash, whether it's in the bank or you put it into bonds, you basically lose money. You're never going to keep up with true inflation. And what he's basically saying to the world is, I would rather lose 10 or 15% of the value of this money over the next year than put it in the stock markets.
Sure.
That's how little confidence. That's how clearly he can see that the stock markets are a catastrophe. It's better to lose 10 or 15% or more, because true inflation in the USA is much higher than that. It's just amazing. It's a lesson for the world.
Ja, en dan as ons mos so twee vleie met een klap kan slaan, Israel is nou baie, amperlik sê, dringend besig om vir Iran te wil aanval, en dan ook dan nou Amerika, wat nou natuurlik vir hulle vliegtuie, bote en allerhande dinge gestuur het om Israel half uit te help in hulle amperlik sê, oorlog wat hulle nou gaan begin voer met Iran, Gaza en al die lande daar rondom.
Yeah, and it's important for all of our listeners to recognize, I know that it's difficult because I know the influence that Christianity has had on the narrative of Israel. And I'm not saying you should be anti-Israel. If Israel's your baby, fine. But at least recognize hard truths. At least recognize, for instance, to give you a for instance, there's been a drama over the past weekend of the soldiers who were raping the Palestinian prisoners. And a crowd of 400 people descended on the jails to get those soldiers released after they were arrested. Because their argument is, the Talmud says that if you rob a Christian or you rape a Christian or a Muslim, it doesn't count as rape. And the Talmud says that explicitly, by the way. The rape of a Christian baby down to the age of 3 years old, the words used are, a man who has done such a thing has done nothing. So let us disagree on Israel. If you love Israel, you want to go to Israel, you want to, by all means. But let us at least agree on basics. Let us agree on what is black, what is white, what is one plus one. Let's agree that today is Thursday. Let's agree on some basics. One of those basics is that America is owned by Israel. It's not the other way around. The the representative Thomas Massie, so Congressman Thomas Massie, recently did an interview with Tucker Carlson in which he revealed that 534 of the 535 U.S. congressmen answers to, and he explained how it works and what the thing is, answers to a representative of APAC, which is the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee. And that's why no American senator, very few, and representative will ever say boo to Israel. And if they are not pro-Israel, they'll never get elected, because APAC will pump millions of dollars into their opponent's campaign, television ads, all of this kind of stuff, when it comes to elections. So that bag is all sewn up. Let's just agree on that. Maybe you say, no, man, but that's a good thing, because Israel, the chosen race, they're perfect, but the rest of us, fine. I say it's bad, you say it's good, no problem, but let's agree that it exists. If you take that into account, then you understand why it is that the USA is so eagerly assisting Israel to cause this phenomenal war. Now, you might say, but why would Israel do that? Why? What is the story with Gaza? And then I would say to you, go and watch a video by Rabbi Ephraim Polvanov, or Rabbi Daniel Glutstein, or Rabbi Mizrahi, and they'll explain it to you. It is to reenact Samson's killing of the Philistines in Gaza, which is a necessary step in the rebuilding of the Third Temple. Greater Israel has to be realized. Now, technically, Gaza is not in what was Greater Israel of the time of the entry of the Israelites into the Promised Land, when the land was divided up among all of the 12 tribes of Israel. Technically, it's not part of it, but there is a belief that the Gazans have to be chased out, as Samson chased them out. And the fact that they weren't chased out in the first place by the 12 tribes entering was a failure on the part of the Israelites to honor God's wishes. So now it must be done. In among many other steps, likewise, the northern border of Greater Israel has to be occupied, if you like, in order for all of the steps to be fulfilled for the coming of the Messiah, the building of the temple, etc., etc. Which means, and the rabbis will tell you this, they said, listen, don't be confused. You know, they talk to their audiences. You don't understand? You don't understand why Benjamin Netanyahu is doing this? It's because we're telling him to do it. There is a fallacy. There's a belief that Benjamin Netanyahu is secular. It's one of the greatest con jobs ever pulled. Benjamin Netanyahu gee homself voor as a non-religious Jew. He shaves his beard. He doesn't grow the payot, you know, the corners of the head, the earlocks. He doesn't wear a kippah. He doesn't keep Yom Shabbos, and so on. But Benjamin Netanyahu once won a prestigious Talmud competition in Israel. In other words, he is one of the most religious, learned Jews alive in the world today, who was delegated to that job. And there are videos that tell the story nicely, and their interviews and what have you. There's no question of what happened. He was delegated as an ultra-religious Jew. From a young age, to occupy the position of Israeli prime minister, so that they could ensure that he would do certain things according to what they wanted. You can't have some guy like Simon Rosh, let's say I go to Israel, I'm Jewish, I'm here from Sandringham in Johannesburg. I go to Israel. I'm eligible as a Jew who has become an Israeli citizen to become a prime minister, but I've never read the Bible. I wouldn't know. They'd be giving me instructions. I said, nah, I don't believe in that, man. So this ultra-religious Jewish guy is ensuring that all of these steps are fulfilled. And the northern border of Israel has to be extended to its original location, which is the Litani River in southern Lebanon, meaning that they've come up with this pretext, Hezbollah, we can't take it anymore, this is no good. I don't say Hezbollah are great guys. I'm saying that the story that we're being told in the media and the story that the rabbis are explaining to their audience, hey, Mr. Jewish man in Florida, you don't understand what's going on, let us help you. This is the real story. In these videos, there are dozens of them. Rabbi Mizrahi produced one yesterday of 3 hours and 27 minutes, and I think one this morning of 3 hours and 31 minutes, explaining just this stuff. Excuse me. So, they have to invade Lebanon, and they have to eradicate the Gazans, and they're going to have to push the eastern border, that is to say, the west bank of the Jordan River, is they're going to have to, which they have effectively done, completely occupied while pretending not to do so. There are about 800,000 settlers on the West Bank, in the West Bank. And so it's no longer really Palestine. Okay. The next thing is that they've got to, well, not the very next thing in the series of steps, but they have to anoint, if that's the right word. Like if you imagine a Roman Catholic priest dipping the little stick in the holy water, and then he flicks it over everybody's heads. Now you can go to war, whatever, you know, or with a censer, he's got incense burning in there, and he holds it up and he sort of casts it over. We've all seen a movie about the Vatican or whatever, or a documentary. So similar idea. the guys who build the temple have to be kind of anointed by the ashes of a perfect red heifer, Rooi Vers, that may not have three white or black hairs, nor may it have just two if they are next to one another. For 2,000 years, the Jews have secretly been looking for red heifers. It's been an ongoing thing. I watched something very interesting about it the other day. And for 2,000 years, they have not found one. In the Bible, there's certain verses that they construe to mean that there will only ever be 10 red heifers in Israel's history. And it is known that the ninth red heifer was incinerated for its ashes, mixed with water, and then a hyssop stick dipped in the ashes with the water and flicked over the boys who have to build the temple. And for other purposes, by the way, other different religious purposes during the year of the Jewish year. They've only been nine, and they've been searching for the 10th one, the last one, for 2,000 years, haven't been able to find it. Lo and behold, they had five of them produced by genetic modification in the USA. And three of them have been deemed acceptable. So they've got a plan A, B, and C. Now, I don't know that anybody knew this, because in none of the research that I've done, going back years and years and years, have I seen it mentioned until about 3 days ago. Somebody said, if you read the verses carefully, the red heifers have to be used, or one of them has to be used, before it's 3 years old.
Hmm.
And they're now 2.5 years old.
Sure.
Meaning that according to the rabbi's reasonings, not mine, nothing that I'm saying is creative. I haven't done anything special to be able to talk about this stuff. I'm not the great, guy who's reading Hebrew in the Bible and doing gematria, the mathematics, the numerology, and then astrology. No, I'm just regurgitating. I'm just echoing like a parrot, repeating like a parrot, things that other people are saying, have said. People very highly regarded as among the highest in the world on this matter. And they are quoting the very highest of history. They're quoting the highest living rabbis and highest rabbis of the past. So they're saying that they have 6 months to take the world to World War III. And America is going to provide the manpower. And so it is that we have things like that voice note that you sent me, in which the American radio Omroeper talks about how he has received a number of emails from family members of soldiers. Excuse me. Hang on, I've got a beautiful spring water here. Farm water. Emails from family members of soldiers saying that their soldier father or husband or son is telling them that his senior commanders are saying, are warning the troops in his battalion, in his company, in his whatever, hey, get ready for something very, very, very big, and tell your family that if they're not from the USA, they should go home. If they are from the USA and they've got nowhere else to go, they should hunker down in their houses and not come out. In other words, they are receiving very dark warnings about what's about to occur in the world, certainly to the USA. I mean, we can keep talking, but let me leave it there, and you tell me what you think.
Ja, ja, so ook net in 'n netedop vir die luisteraars is, dit is nou precies wat Simon gesê het, die redes hoekom Israel dan nou moet uitbrei en aanval in Iran, en byvoorbeeld is vir daai landgebied wat hulle nodig het, om dan die, wat noem mens dit nou, Simon, ach jees, amper wil ek sê die kasteel, die tempel op te bou, om die tempel op te bou, yes. en daar die type dinge te doen, maar ja, ok, Simon, die Amerika het nou ook vliegtuie en bote vir Israel gestuur, wil jy net so vinnig iets dalk daar oor sê?
Ja, the long and the short of it is, that Israel has been provoking Iran to war for quite some time now. Even if you're a pro-Israel, anti-Muslim guy, and you say, oh, Iran, they're Muslim, I could never take their side. I'm not asking you to take their side. I'm just saying that it's now widely recognized among the foremost observers and commentators that many of Israel's actions against Iran over the past, call it year and a half, are very difficult to justify in terms of tit for tat. You pushed me, so I'll push you twice. No, it's a case of, you haven't pushed me for a year, so I'm going to knock you over the head with a hammer 12 times. And Iran has been very restrained in its reactions. However, Israel crossed a red line recently when it assassinated Ismail Haniyeh, the lead negotiator for Hamas with Israel. So, you know, you hear these stories from World War II, and the secret negotiations were going on between this one and that one, and you think, but they were fighting one another, killing, huh? In real life, in the real world, that's how it works. Emissaries get sent between kings that are trying to kill one another from time to time. Hamas and Israel have been in negotiations to try and resolve the matters of the kidnapped, the hostages, and all sorts of things. They assassinated the lead negotiator when he was attending the inauguration of Iran's new president after Iran's previous president died in a very suspicious helicopter crash after visiting the opening of a new dam between Iran on the border, you know, a river border between Iran and Armenia or Iran and Azerbaijan. So at that time, there was belief that the story is so fishy, it's just not true, how that first president died. Lo and behold, they get a second president. He's having his big party, inaugurations and all. He's got his VIP guests. And Israel assassinates Kamstach, but Evakni in these negotiations, at his guest house, 750 meters from the presidential palace of Iran. So sure. The Iranians are saying all hell is going to break loose. And if sometimes you have to, there's no other way of engaging with this information than going to see it for yourself. I'm going to say something now and people might say, oh, well, I don't know. I'm not convinced. But if you were watching what I watch morning, noon, and night, up to 8-9 hours a day of these rabbis explaining what they're doing to the world, then you would understand very easily this is about the necessity of causing a war between Iran and the USA, between the mentality of Poros and the mentality of Roimi, between the 35 Caucasian light-skinned nations of the world and the 35 black-haired nations of the world.
Yeah. It
just is. So, yeah, they're trying their damnedest to get the Iranians to go crazy, and the Americans are waiting to assist Israel in that exercise and in the invasion of southern Lebanon. Right now, the Americans have 20 F-22 Raptors that are already deployed there. They have 12 vessels. Some of them very big vessels, not exactly aircraft carriers in the 12. There are aircraft carriers in the vicinity, but not in the 12. This is just off the offshore of Israel. And they are carrying about 7,000 frontline infantry combat soldiers, over and above sailors and fleonese and medics and infantrymen. So it looks as if things could go skeef at any minute. And as I say, it's now Kamstach, they say, that the red heifer has to be slaughtered within the next 6 months. So this war has got to kick off. There's a whole timeline. It's very, very interesting. It's absolutely intriguing. I think that we're going to see all hell break loose. Vladimir Putin was meant to be assassinated in some Ukrainian/US thing on the 28th of July, and the Russians contacted the USA about it on, I believe, the 7th of July, if I'm not mistaken. And apparently, nobody knows, there hasn't been a full leak yet. Apparently, the USA was read the Riot Act. The Russians read the USA the Riot Act. They said, we've uncovered this plot, don't deny it. And we know that Ukraine wouldn't be able to carry it out without certain services rendered by you, such as targeting information, all sorts of things. Therefore, you are part of an assassination plot against the president of Russia. Would you like us to bury the White House tonight under 2 megatons of uranium? And the USA apparently, you know, I don't want to use a crass term, but they got very, very scared very, very quickly.
Soiled themselves.
They soiled themselves. That's it. Very well said. They soiled themselves, and the thing was called off, and the events went ahead. Absolutely, absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Lots of big things going on. Can I just tell you the story about Many Men?
Okay, yeah, I believe.
Okay, so there's a rapper in the USA, African-American guy, sings rap. He's one of the biggest in history. He is arguably the biggest, maybe. His name is 50 Cent. He goes by that name. And he was a genuine gangster, not a imitation gangster. He was once shot 9 times by a hitman employed by an enemy of his. So he's like this legitimate hard, hard, hard guy. Everybody's afraid of him, whatever. He had a song called Many Men. Many men want to take my life. Many men want to see me dead. And it was a very big hit. It's a very, very famous song in the USA. Donald Trump there was the assassination attempt. And since then, over the past, let's call it a week or whatever, he has been going to his big rallies and entering the rallies with this African-American rap song playing in the background, Many Men Want Me Dead. And commentators are saying things like, it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. When you saw him do that for the first time, you knew he won. He won. He's going to win in November. And I'm not a Donald Trump fan, but I know that so many conservatives are. So I thought I would tell that cute story because it's doing the rounds on the internet, something unbelievable. The whole of America is just going crazy about this hardcore response of Donald Trump.
Maar ek bedoel, as al nou hierdie oorlog gaan, as die Amerika nou gaan nou officieel die oorlog betree ook in Israel en in Ukraine en maak nie saak waar oorals nie, gaan dit nog steeds plaasvind? Gaan hulle nog steeds hulle elections hê? Ek weet nie, miskien is dit 'n ding wat hulle beplan sodat daar nie weer 'n election hoef te wees nie as hierdie hele oorlogssituasie dan nou verder vlam vat.
Well, that's a very good question, Marius. I was telling you earlier about the Americans. One guy has come out twice now, and last year he spent some time with Roy Schall, the head of St. Westlanders.
Yeah.
Because his ontsnaproute is via, it's a boat across the Atlantic, a yacht. He's got it all figured out. And to Namibia. That's his. He wants to be one of the first people in the white tents. Or like another guy said to me, I'm holding stuff for him at the moment, medical supplies, and he's sending another bunch out in November. He also wants to be one of the first. But as he said to me, in fact, I don't want to be one of the first white tenters. I want to get there early so that I live with you. I said, you, by all means. He's a highly, highly, highly trained nurse. So who would say no in circumstances of civil war?
Yeah.
But the point being that a lot of people are beginning to recognize that what's going on in the USA is biggie buyer bad. And people are talking about, but what if before, let's say there's a nuclear war, beforehand, they prevent people from, the commercial travel gets shut down. A few days ago, I warned my friend Louis that in the morning, there were these reports coming out that America was telling people don't travel by air, the USA. It turned out later what they said was don't travel to Lebanon. But they didn't make that clear at first. So people in the USA are panic bufanger.
Yeah.
And if they do go to war prior to the elections, which are always held on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November every 4 years. So if the Tuesday falls on the 1st of November, then the elections are held on the 8th because the first Monday is on the 7th.
Yeah.
So it's the first day after the first Monday. If come election time, there's war on the go, will they declare a state of emergency? Martial law is something else. I mean, people in South Africa are forever talking about martial law. Martial law is when your president goes by the title of general, when the army takes over the parliament and the cabinet and the executive and the legislative, kicks them all out, and the army rules the country. Martial law is not on the table here. It is a state of emergency of what degree, you know, very severe one or a mild one. But
yeah.
Would they say, oh, we can't have elections now because, golly gee, there's just too much going on. We could never hold an election. Who knows what move they will pull? But my point, my long-winded point is to say yes, Marius, to your question. Yes, I think that you are right to suspect that at the rate that things are going at the moment, anything is possible, and we may not see a U.S. election. Right now, it's coming out that Robert Kennedy Jr., the third, sometimes, it's very seldom in the USA, but it has happened a couple of times in my lifetime, that there will be an independent candidate. There's nothing that says the winner of the presidential elections has to come from the Democrats or the Republicans. They always do. The independent candidates always fail. But this year, there will not be two candidates. There will be three. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of Robert F. Kennedy, the brother of John F. Kennedy. Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated after his brother. He was, at the time, the Attorney General of the USA, and he was investigating his brother's assassination, so they took him out.
Yep.
His son
is
an independent candidate. Tonight, it's coming out that he's just canceled a big rally because of an assassination plot that was uncovered. So that says everything by way of answering your question.
Yeah.
It's going haywire in that country right now. Marius, it is really very, very bad.
Ja, wel Simon, baie dankie weer eens dat jy met ons gesels het. Ek glo elke week van nou af gaan het amper net nog meer en nog meer dinge in die nuus oor die hele wêreld gebeur wat al hoe meer kens raak. So ek glo ons gaan weer iets lekkers hê om oor volgende week te gesels en dan, dan sê ek weer eens net dankie vir jou lekker praatjie weer eens vanavond. Ek en die luisteraars geniet het baie.
Thank you very much, and I'm sorry, but I just want to mention one thing for those people who are interested in these things. Monday is what's called Tisha B'Av, which means the ninth of the month of Av in the Hebrew lunisolar calendar. It's the only calendar that works on the moon and the sun. And it is the day of the great tragedies of the Jewish people. So there's this huge thing around the world waiting to see if Iran is going to attack.
Simon? Okay, nee, ach, wat dit is maar net, hy wat sê, hy het my nou verloor. Maar baie dankie weer eens vir amal se inskakel by hierdie Suidlanders Gesels program wat ons donderdag aan hou om 6:00. Simon Roche wat baie interessante dinge gesels, dis natuurlik deel van sy werk om hierdie wêreld gebeure alles dopte hou en hy se kenner in die veld dit is hoekom het so lekker is met hom te gesels. Natuurlik kan jy as luisteraar, as jy 'n vraag of twee het wat jy wil hê ek moet vir Simon volgende week in donderdag vra, kan jy dit gerus instuur. Die telefoonnommer hier in die ateljee, die WhatsApp telefoonnommer is 082 730 60 40 082 730 60 40. Spaar hy nommer op jou foon, dis 'n WhatsApp telefoonnommer, en dan tik jy vir my boodskap in as jy dalk wil hê ek moet volgende week en donderdag met vir Simon jou vraag vra.